Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
In the form of salad. We had a salad today. How's the hangover, Judy?
I don't know why I craved salad for a hangover.
It's so like, weird. There's this great pizza here. This Beastmaster. Is this the Beastmaster or the Axel Rosenberg pizza?
That's the Axel.
Man, it's this is a hangover destroyer. You know what's good for a hangover?
Drinking, beer in the shower.
Also, drinking too much the night before.
Speaking of drinking,
this is the Booze Cruise, the Jews Booze Cruise.
Happy almost Hanukkah, Mike.
Thank you very much. The Festival of Lights. We're celebrating. We're going to start today. With some Hebrew
and a book on drinking, a book on bars.
And another one of our favorite dipsomaniacs, Aaron Fairbanks, executive director of the Heritage Radio Network. In other words, our boss.
Who's already been up doing yoga this Sunday
and making charcuterie. And what else have you been up to this morning, Aaron?
Just, you know, kicking ass, taking names.
Yeah. Aaron, hashtag winning Fairbanks.
But it's my second to last show.
Oh, my God. Your penultimate show. Sad face emoji. Sad face emoji.
Sad face. And we have Sean Manning, who just edited this book, Come Here Often. 53 writers raise a glass to their favorite bar.
A book about bars. And I love it. I've been digging into it. And I relate.
I'm just kind of flabbergasted being here right now because I've previously done shows on NPR, on WNYC, and now to be in the back of Roberta's, where there's pizza and booze.
Does NPR give you pizza?
Do not. No. There's you get a glass of water, which is, you know, it's public radio.
This is National Pizza Radio here. And also joining us, of course, is Zach Davis from the Schmaltz Brewing Company, peddling the aforementioned, tumbling, I should say, for the aforementioned Hebrew. And he brought a menorah made of beer.
That's right. Yeah, preaching the gospel, getting ready for Hanukkah next week.
And we're already into the Messiah Nut Brown Ale, which is very tasty. And it's a good breakfast beer, I find.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I can't really think about that.
You left it all in the bar last night, huh, McGuire?
Well, I went to the Murray Hill Christmas show, which was very festive. And, you know, when you're drinking red wine, I had like three red wines and then a beer afterwards. It's just, I'm too old for that.
You can't mix. You can't
drinking
mix.
Wine and
Is
then
that
beer?
It? Yeah. I think I just shouldn't have four drinks.
Yeah.
But of any persuasion, but.
I do find that strain running through this book, though, a lot of sort of nostalgia for youth.
Yeah.
Like, you know, haven't been there in 20 years, but man, it was great.
I did love that you are also not a Mars Bar fan.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard you guys talk to Rosie Schapp about that on a previous podcast, and I was kind of intrigued by, like, some people, you know, swear by it. Other people, most people swear
by it. I love the Mars Bar, I gotta say. And
that's because you can pee standing up. Seriously.
Hey, don't knock it till you tried it.
I've tried it, and I will mock it.
Aaron can write her name in the snow.
Any place that gets shut down by a fruit fly infestation, you just got to wonder, like, what, like,
they're pretty hardcore on fruit fly infestations.
Lately,
you can get shut down pretty easily. But Mars Bar, they should have been shut down for, like, herpes on
that is the
sea.
Least offense.
Like,
right.
A fruit fly would be just a little protein in your drink.
But the chance of getting into a fight in there was probably like 1 in 3, which is a fantastic ratio.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're the fighting type. I loved Rosie's essay in there about the bars in Belfast.
Yeah, I think that the cool thing about the book is that it's not just about the bars themselves. It's sort of about where people were in their lives, sort of what, transitional periods. You know, Rosie, in her case, she was, studying or traveling abroad, doing some research for a story she was writing. So I think it sort of is all-encompassing. It's sort of like a travelogue as much as it is an ode to drinking.
Yeah, it's nice that it wasn't just New York.
So how many of the New York bars have you been to, Judy?
Oh, I think I've been to all of them.
I think I've been to all of them as well. And I was really proud. I scored 100. It's like one of those BuzzFeed quizzes.
Really?
It's like, how drunk are you? It's like, congratulations. Share your dipsomania with your friends.
I've never been to I was never at Malachi McCourt's bar.
Yeah, I'm kind of fascinated. I'm trying to do some research on it. It's like even going back to the New York Times archives, and it's like, next to the Barbizon, women's
I mean, it hasn't been a women's hotel since, I don't know, the 80s maybe?
Yeah.
But yeah, my grandfather came from Ireland and opened a bar, and he had the separate entrance for women, the separate back room, so they wouldn't soil their reputations. I mean, that ended pretty early, and my parents met at the bar because my father was a bartender there.
Oh, wow.
And my mother's uncle used to go in there, and he thought that Jack would make a fine husband for his niece, Fran, which is so Irish. Who's going to fix you up with a bartender? But,
why 53? Is that like the magic number? Is it symbolic of something?
I kept getting pitches, and I just wanted to keep including as many as possible. And also, I've been told that if you have an odd number in the book title, it sells better.
86.
No, that's it. So it sounds like at 53, 51. If it was 50, it doesn't.
Have you ever been 86 from a bar, McGuire? Really?
I mean,
Back in your punk rock youth?
It's hard for a woman to be 86.
I definitely got tossed out of I guess it was the Village Idiot, or was it downtown Beirut when it was on 10th Street over there, because Peter Landau and I played the Flipper song Brainwash over and over again on the jukebox. We just kept putting money and playing it, and finally it was like, you, get the fuck out.
Most jukeboxes do have a skip button, though, for the bartender. Like, they used to do that at the Brooklyn Ale House whenever anyone would play Sweet Child of Mine, which is like 15 times a night.
Speaking of Guns N' Roses, you got a Guns N' Roses member
here,
Duff, who also says, well, I don't drink that much anymore.
Well, that was a cool thing. And some of the more unexpected essays like him and Andrew WK, you expect these rock stars, Craig Finn, to write about, in Craig Finn's case he did, but to write about these sort of debaucherous, rock star, iconic, lecherous bars. And Duff wrote about a bar in Seattle because of its chili.
Right. And Andrew WK, who contributed to my last book too.
Oh, awesome.
I love him.
Yeah.
And one of the finer bumpers on the Heritage Radio
Network. Oh, yeah. Well, the best bumper, I have to say.
Yeah.
That one works for us, Aaron Fairbanks.
Liz, can we cue up the Andrew WK bumper for the break, please?
No, but I haven't been to the bar he mentioned, which just sounds like some weird...
It's just a random Irish pub in Midtown.
I got to tell you, I was a big fan of those Midtown bars. Yeah. And the Blarney Bar is on 32nd Street and 33rd Street and over there by Madison Square Garden. And, was it Smith's that just closed over on 8th Avenue?
Yeah.
And the places that had big steam plates of corned beef. Mm-hmm. And back in the day when I was working for the wrestling magazine at the Empire State Building... that's where you'd have lunch, because for $6, you just get this crazy amount of corned beef and potatoes and whatever, your sandwich from these steam plates and sort of just drink there with an older crowd.
Well, the crazy thing is the Blarney Stone.
That was real New York.
Yeah, the Blarney Stone that Dan Fonte writes about, which I didn't realize doing some research of. There was that was a chain of bars.
Yeah.
So there was 30-odd Blarney Stones at one time.
But there was also the Blarney Rock, the Blarney Cove, which I believe is, it's mentioned in the foreword anyway, the Blarney Cove, which was on 14th
Street.
Which would stay open until, you get locked in at 4:01, you'd get locked in, and good luck getting out until the sun came up.
There's a lot of interesting traditions in New York bars that I think of the rest of the country or the world doesn't do, the lock-in. Everybody I've talked to that doesn't live in New York, they're like, what?
It happens in London, too.
It does? Okay.
Uh-huh. It's not my lifestyle anymore. I guess I could join.
I don't know what that is, guys.
The
lock-in? That's because you're up at 7 a.m. doing yoga.
Namaste, namaste.
Well, I've been locked into so many bars. It's at 4 o'clock is closing time, which is a civilized closing time, unlike London when they close up when at 11 p.m. or something completely medieval. At 4:01, the doors get locked, and it turns into a private party. I mean, the bar is open, but it's not open. And for those who are in the know, that's your after-hours club.
Yeah.
The scariest lock-in I ever heard about was at Cokie's.
Oh,
which is
you do not want to be locked in there. No.
A cabbie got shot out front. You know, it was a robbery. And my friend who was a doctor, he was doing his internship at the time, he got locked in until about 10 o'clock the next morning, and he quit doing coke because of it. Because it was just like, he's like, I could ruin my entire career if the cops came in.
Yeah.
But, like, cokies would lock down. Like,
oh,
whoosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a favorite of mine for a while.
Yeah,
I was a big fan of the lock-in too.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Hey, while we're talking about all this booze, is making me thirsty. Zach, you got another beer for us to taste?
Yeah.
What are you going to follow up the Messiah with?
Yeah, so the Messiah is our brown ale, and we figure appropriate for the holidays. And so the next one is Hot Mana, which is our single IPA. It's just really nice West Coast, super grapefruit citrus, and drink up.
All right. We have little beer shot glasses.
Oh, we have a caller. Liz says we have a caller.
We have a caller?
We have a caller.
We have a phone?
Yeah, we have a phone.
Hey, who's this?
I heard someone somewhere say the words downtown Beirut.
Oh, it's our old friend
so
Mike McPadden.
Calling right away.
Mike McPadden.
It's heavy metal movies author and downtown Beirut survivor, Mike McPadden.
Hey, Mike.
Everybody.
So, yeah, you were a habituant of the downtown Beirut.
Yeah, and I never got 86 from there. I did get 86 from the Full Moon Saloon.
Where was the Full Moon Saloon?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was on 8th Avenue and 46th Street.
Oh.
And what was great there was that they essentially had cocaine on tap. And I'd wander over there from my exploits on 42nd Street, get, you know, my supplies for the evening, and then make it down to downtown Beirut.
And the Full Moon Saloon, which was run by our friend Ernie,
yeah,
also ran the Holland Bar.
Oh, nice.
Which was with a classic dive bar and another drug den. He was the guy that told me TVs and bars should only be tuned to sports of the President of the United States because it's the only things that sell drinks. And one day he came in during the day and caught them watching like One Day of Our Lives, the regulars, and he ripped the TV out of the wall and threw it on the street.
Wow.
I would do the same.
Not easy to get thrown out of the Full Moon, my friend.
So, Mike, what bars do you miss?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Are there any bars that you miss? Having moved out to
Big Sky, you know, I kind of bellied up to downtown Beirut when I was like 19 years old and stayed there. The Dugout was another favorite.
My all-time favorite bar, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of it. It was Dugout, Beirut, and then when I became a drug addict, the Full Moon Saloon, and then back to the Dugout and back to the Beirut.
We should point out that author Mike McPadden is not a drug addict any longer.
Well, yeah.
Which is why he's so...
I quit it all. But
so
I certainly do miss it, yeah.
You miss it.
So sobriety, is it all that's cracked up to be, Mike?
It's pretty good. I get to actually write books rather than just write shit and hand it to people, which is what I did at downtown Beirut.
Yeah. Before we go, let's get a plug for your new book, your heavy metal movie book on Bazillion Points.
Yeah, that's and then just recently signed and cashed a check for Going All the Way, the ultimate guide to teen sex comedies of the VHS era.
Awesome.
Nice.
All right, can't
wait. Also
from Bazillion Points.
All right, so you're getting it done. All right, Mike McPadden, everybody.
Okay,
the survivor of downtown Beirut. And man, that was a different time though in the 80s drinking at those bars. And no kidding about the cocaine on top at the Full Moon Saloon. That was something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the essays Alicia Chappelle writes about downtown Beirut, which is really interesting. I think that's the cool thing too, is like it is educational for a lot of people that, like, you know, just moved to New York. They don't really connect that, oh, that nail salon used to be this kick-ass dive bar. And
well, have we seen is the death of the dive bar something we should be talking about?
I don't think. As long as the turkey's nest is still around, I feel like. I think that would be. There's a few places for me that it would be sort of like the death knell, but, you know.
He owns the building, so
yeah.
Until he decides to cash out, like, they're not going to get pushed out by rent.
Yeah.
And he has a son who works there, so
it's
like a multi-generational shit show over there.
And Milano's, which is in your book, my favorite dive bar, really one of my all-time favorite bars, and I've gotten into trouble a couple of times over there. You know, it gets late real early at Milano's, nice to say.
I think I'm less worried about the death of the dive bar as much as the death of the jukebox, which I think is interesting, is that like with the digital, with iPod and with everything. I mean, I did a jukebox bar crawl a couple weekends ago around the East Village, and there's still some places down there, like Tile Bar and a couple other places that still have, like, old, like, put the record on jukebox type.
Well, Great Jones, one of the great jukeboxes
in
New York
City.
Oh,
yeah, totally.
I miss that, too. And also, but it's also the the abundance of flat screen TVs in New York. I wouldn't even eat in a fucking restaurant with a TV. Yeah. If I see a TV in a restaurant, I just turn around and walk the fuck out.
Well, then you would not be able to eat in Hoboken because there is not one restaurant or bar without.
I'm also confused. I was at a gas station the other day that had a TV in the gas pump. So, like, at no moment would you need to be disconnected.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It was like the gas stations on the Autobahn selling booze.
Well, yeah.
All right, well, that's I can get behind that.
Zach, I'm digging your hot manna, the manna Thanks. IPA here. Actually, I'm not kind of a big IPA fan these days. I feel like I've been IPA'd to death over the last 10, 15 years. But this is a beer that's confident without being obnoxious.
I appreciate that.
It's fruity.
Modeled it after, I was going to say we modeled it after me, but...
Wow, Zach, you taste good.
Thank you. Yeah, that's been a really great one for us, and especially this time of the season. I mean, everybody's into the IPAs, but I actually, the brown ale we drank first is like one of my all-time favorites.
Well, I feel like we're moving from breakfast to lunch.
We are, and soon we'll be drinking some Hanukkah beer, which is even a little bit more malty and hoppy and everything.
And Aaron Fairbanks, executive director of HRN, is nodding her head yes.
I'm nodding my head yes, because I am a Hanukkah supporter. I mean, I want to know how... Hanukkah in a glass, take us there. Take us on the journey. What's that mean?
So the company is called Schmaltz Brewing Company, and our brand has been Hebrew, which we started in 1996, and we call ourselves the only extreme Jewish brewery in the country. All of the beers are certified kosher, and, you know, we're trying to make amazing beer, but also kind of injecting into it some of the Jewish culture and tradition. So actually, 18 years in, we had never made a Hanukkah beer before. And you go to any store and you'll see a million Christmas beers, elf beers, Santa beers. And we're like, it's time for the Jews to have a Hanukkah beer.
Hanukkah really gets, it's a sad little, in my lobby, they really get shunted off into a corner. There's, you know, a huge
the shtetl.
Tree and snowmen.
It's called the shtetl.
Yeah,
well, yeah, okay, and the shtetl. They've got a little box with, you know, some Hanukkah wrapping paper and a plug-in menorah.
And a dreidel.
We don't even have a dreidel.
You don't get a dreidel.
No.
Yeah, so
maybe
we figured
I'll pick one up.
We're 2% of the 2% of the population. We only want 2% of the beer market. And this beer is actually brewed with 8 malts, 8 hops, and 8% alcohol content.
Wah, wah. Yeah, 2% of the population, and most of them don't even drink.
That is not, well, but those who do drink heavily.
All right, tell you what, let's take a break. But before we go, we have a message from our corporate master, Aaron Fairbanks, here. Let's not forget, it is the season of giving.
It is the season of giving, and of course, Mike and Judy come on every week to give you guys more and more great content along with all their guests, and want to give a shout out for the station. We are member supported, so if you like the show, if you believe in what we're doing, the best way to show that is by becoming a supporter. You can visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click the donate tab, become a member, and we'll send you a lovely gift, like a pizza bag or a tchotchka or a thing. You know, maybe a lovely can opener to open some of your Hebrew Hanukkah beer.
Got it.
Get it while it's hot. Get it while we're still in Hanukkah, I guess.
Hanukkah's got 8 days of Hanukkah, so you can donate
time.
Eight times. Well, thanks, Aaron. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to hear some drinking music, and we'll be back with Arts and Seizures.
You are listening to Alco Hollywood by The Ranch Hands.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
That was
that
the first,
wasn't Andrew W.K.
I believe that was the first. That was the first bumper from Satan. Merry Christmas.
We love babies.
And you love Christmas. We got the show Arts and Seizure today in full effect. There is more beer and more pizza in this room today than I can ever remember. And the awkward date table.
Oh, yeah. Something's happening.
Oh, she's telling him, let's be friends. Oh,
I don't think so. He looks too happy.
I'm going to take a picture of that.
I think he's getting late again this afternoon. Mm-hmm. I think somehow he turned it around. That is not there a blow.
He doesn't look like a closer to me.
Uh-huh.
What's the next on the beer, Zach?
Your beard is so cute.
What's the next beer we got?
So the next beer I'm going to pour for you guys is the Hanukkah beer.
Oh, right, the
so
Hanukkah
this is,
beer.
Like I said, this is the newest seasonal.
Does it come with a song, a Hanukkah beer song?
Every Hanukkah beer.
Judy, would you sing for us?
Hanukkah, Hanukkah, come light the menorah.
Let's
Hanukkah,
have a party. We'll all pass the Torah. Gather around the table. We'll give you a
this we're is about
the
song halfway there.
I learned that song in third grade. I still remember it.
In Ohio?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
A progressive community totally. That you must have grown up in. So this is the
public
Hanukkah
school
beer.
This is the Hanukkah beer. 8 malts, 8 hops, 8% to
and
celebrate.
And still Gentile friendly, correct?
Gentile approved, actually. Yeah. But certified kosher. And just a really, almost like a winter warmer style. So kind of roasty and spicy with some nice hop character to it.
Also very nice.
Yeah, thank you.
I got to say, this is a nice... trip you're taking us across.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah,
can
and actually
what all the Hanukkah
absolutely
there?
What you can't see behind us is our craft beer menorah, which is sitting right behind Judy. So we got this
on Instagram. Schmaltz,
it is on Instagram.
_ brewing.
Yeah, just Schmaltz Brewing. Yeah, yeah.
A menorah made of beer.
So basically it's our gift pack. Comes with all of our limited release beers.
Dreams
and,
can come true.
8 beers, Hanukkah candles, glassware, and we have an online competition where people build their craft beer menorah and submit it to Facebook. And
So you can actually buy this?
So this is in the competition. I don't think it's a winner yet, but
okay.
If you guys could probably play
I was
going to
build a Christmas tree out of bourbon.
You could submit it to our beer menorah competition.
But you would not win, though.
Not this competition.
No.
Not this competition. So, Sean, we were talking about this just before the show. I was surprised all the nice categories you have here of bars that you broke it down to dive bars and some family bars and some food bars and some nostalgic things and upscale bars. But there was no section particularly on gay bars.
Yeah, I tried to integrate all that stuff within. And there's a piece by Mike Albo in the section called Romance where he talks about the bar, which is like a very famous.
That's like a notorious. Yeah. It was an institution.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating to hear him talk about it. One of my favorite parts of the essay is he talks about how there was no cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
And then so like people would just go there to meet initially at the beginning of the night.
Yeah.
And then sort of figure out what they were doing from there.
It's sort of like analog version of that popular app.
Yeah, there was no Grindr. There was, you know, a couple beers with guys
back
and then
corner.
You'd go across the street to the cock or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the East Village, and people talk about the West Village, but the East Village gay bar scene was pretty lively back when. And the cock bar, that was the one on 12th or 13th Street across the movie theater, is that right?
No, the cock, that was Dick's.
Ah, see how I could be confused.
Dick's was probably the most depressing gay bar. The cock was across. I think the cock is still there.
Yeah,
you'll see it by the neon cock.
I was in the Monster not too long ago, and man, what a great bar that is! You know, come on, Judy, sing along. There's a piano. You love to sing along.
I like Marie's Crisis for my piano.
Oh yeah, here's the question. This is a book. Come here often. Writers on their favorite bar. What is your favorite bar at the moment? At the moment, where do you go?
At the moment, okay, so me and my friend were supposed to meet at Ralph's the other night for a Christmas drink, because it's super festive on 3rd Avenue. You need a reservation to get in
what?
There. Yeah.
Then it's not a bar.
At 4:30, you needed a reservation. If you look in the window, you'll see, like, it's crazy. So we went to this place, Molly's, right next door on 3rd Avenue between 22nd and 23rd.
One of my favorite bars in my old neighborhood. Molly's, fantastic.
A fireplace.
Best daytime bar in the winter. Best winter daytime bar without a doubt, Molly's.
Yeah, so we went there. We had a beer. We had, you know, a burger. And, you know, now that I'm of a certain age, I enjoy some food. a little nosh for Hanukkah with my beverage. So I would have to say Molly's.
Are you older than Duff McKagan?
I think we're probably the same age. We used to write for the same paper.
His brother was my band teacher in middle school.
Oh, you're young.
Mr. McKagan. Yeah.
Are you from Seattle?
No, I'm from California.
Oh, okay.
I love Molly's, and it's a tough question, favorite bar, because I don't really, I'm in search of a locale, a regular locale.
Well, you just moved, I just moved, so, well, I mean, for a while, my favorite bar was Sweetwater in Williamsburg.
Sweetwater was great.
That was the original, right, in that neighborhood. That was sort of one of the
Sure, and through its various iterations. I remember when it was a hardcore punk bar, now it's sort of what gastropub all cleaned up.
Yeah, and I mean, I liked it when it was a punk bar. I like the restaurant, too. It's nice, but I didn't go there to drink.
Well, I like a good punk rock bar. I mean, the world needs world-class punk rock bars.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the years that we were traveling with my bands and whatnot, I mean, every town seemed to have one absolutely first-rate dive bar that, you know, was well, well stocked with, with the jukebox and purple hair and whatnot. Yeah. But it just seemed the party never ended. And I don't know if that's happening or not. Maybe Manitoba's a little bit is like that. Otto certainly has its charm. But I don't know. I think it's kind of a dying thing. And of course, I'm superannuating myself out of that.
What are you guys thinking? Like, you're slightly younger than Mike and I. Where do you guys go?
I mean, well, I live like two blocks from the Turkey's Nest, and I play on the Williamsburg Softball League Turkey's Nest team. So I have an affinity for the Nest. But I think that whole it's interesting how that whole area has changed in a lot of ways.
Kicked me right out of it.
Is that you were a Williamsburg girl?
20 years, yeah, baby. Yeah.
So where are you at now?
Jackson Heights.
Okay.
I'm making Queens cool. Queens is like the number one travel destination according to
Yeah, that's right. Congratulations.
Thank you. I cool follows me.
I always liked the Greenpoint Inn over there on Bedford Avenue.
Rosemary's.
Which is classic, you know. Get Budweiser and a Styrofoam
cup. Oh, totally,
cup.
Yeah. I think the Styrofoam cup is another one was lost art.
But she used to always tell me, she says, don't worry, honey, the Budweiser is fresh. We change the keg every 15 minutes.
And they clean the lines every 15 years. I used to have an immediate headache from the beer there. What about you, Mr. Schmaltz? Where do they sell it? What bars?
So we're, mostly we're selling in all of the places where you can get great craft beer. So, I mean, as we come into the holidays next week, we've got some events at places like Barcade in Chelsea, Taproom 307, Spite and Dival on the 21st.
Spite and Dival's really good.
Yeah, really awesome.
Great yard.
Yeah, and I moved here from California just a little bit over a year ago, so I'm still like completely exploring the neighborhood, the area. I live in Brooklyn. I live over in Borum Hill. So for me, places like Bar Great Harry
is near where I live,
Brooklyn
and that's my nice bar for sure.
Brooklyn Inn is really and then nice.
Very dog friendly Bar Great Harry.
Yeah, it seems to me though that no matter how often or to how many places I go, every single minute, there's a new place that I haven't tried, so I'm still feeling a little bit like out of the loop.
It's it shifted too because I used to be. I do like dive bars. I always
Jimmy's
will.
Corner. How did we forget that?
Right, one of the great bars in all of Midtown Manhattan. And like I said, like Andrew WK said in this book, I mean, Midtown is great for drinking, and you got to know where to find those things because you're always at some to do that you don't really want to be, or a rock concert at Radio City or Madison Square Garden or what have you, and you need to find a place to drink. And knowing the bars in Midtown, I think, is essential to being a real New Yorker.
Yeah,
one of the first bars I ever went to was Doc Holliday's.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
That was my introduction to New York.
And you kept drinking after that.
And it's like, for me, I don't have much like nostalgic history of New York, but that's one of these places where I'm like, oh, that was the only bar in the entire state.
But that's the thing. It's like, I think a lot of people, too, like, there are like some bar snobs. Yeah. And like, my initial reaction, like, oh, sorry, but like, fuck it. Like, your spot. Like, you had a great time, like, so be it.
I think I got a pitcher of Jack and Coke for $13 or something.
Is it your introduction in the book, Sean? We're talking about the Howard Johnson's bar.
Yeah. Oh, that was
Square,
great.
Which was one of the great places to drink.
So cool.
And the sign in the window, you talk about a pitcher of Jack and Coke, it said, a carafe of martinis. Why not? That's what the sign said. I can
Indeed.
Think of plenty of reasons why not.
I mean, I still see that orange neon glow is, like, emblazoned in the corneas of my eyes.
That orange glow was the last gasp of Times Square culture for sure.
Well, Jimmy's a sort of Times Square.
Jimmy's counts as Times Square, absolutely. I count that as the extended
Times Square
area.
Not to get on our nostalgia trip.
No. No, not necessarily.
Well, I think I was listening to Rosie's podcast that she did with you guys, and I know she mentioned, like, you know, that's the, like, New York just changes. That's just the ephemeral nature of New York. And part of me is yes, but another part of me is like, no. You know, like, there has
Stop
to be somebody
it.
That speaks like, out and says, this is part of what makes the fabric of the place.
Well, we've talked about it so often on the show about, like, change and change for change's sake, and people were just against it. You know, they want the city not to change, and that's never going to be the case.
No.
And, you know, when people up in arms about Taylor Swift coming in and, you know, planting her flag in the terra firma here, but celebrities have been, you know, claiming New York City as their own. They've been carpet bagging since there was New York, since there was celebrity.
Totally.
So it's just the way things are. The nostalgia,
but still,
I feel.
Telephone bar should have never closed.
Telephone bar. I won the how many jelly beans in a jelly in a jar contest on Easter Sunday there, and like,
whoa,
like, yeah. How about that?
What was the prize?
How do you like me now?
It was a jar of jelly beans?
It was dinner. Later I'll tell you the whole story because it was a real like Inspector Brown kind of saga how I solved the problem using my Rain Man technique. She called me up. She says, what the fuck? You got it to the jelly bean.
What?
Well, it helps to know how many ounces are in a pint.
Oh my God. You hustled them.
Hey, you know, there's no rule against doing math in my head.
Yeah, you're like the card counter of jelly beans. You can make this a habit.
Yeah, you know, they close soon after.
You shut them down.
Hell's bells, Judy McGuire.
My second to last show. One is more almost show. Over.
One more show. Please reconsider. Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so.
Jackson Heights is a hump.
People out there in Radio Land, please give to the Heritage Radio Network. Save Judy McGuire.
Let her get dessert in addition to her salad raise.
Listen, I thought when we got the toppings on the pizza, the deal was done.
Who negotiated for toppings?
It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, it is nonetheless the fastest half hour on the internet today. So let's celebrate Sean Manning's book. Come here often one more time. Sean, where can we get your book? Are you doing any gigs? Personal appearances? Or we just find you at the bar?
This is it. I mean, I am. This is the grand tour.
You really don't need Colbert. You don't need anything else.
He doesn't give you pizza either, my friend.
No, he does not. This is green room and studio all in the same thing. This is fantastic.
And Zach from the Schmaltz Brewing Company, he brew.
Yeah, come check us out. We've got events all week long for Hanukkah. We'll be at the Brooklyn Brewery tomorrow on Monday, Barcade Chelsea Tuesday, Tap Room 307 Wednesday, Craftsman Ale House up in Harrison on Friday. And then Spite and Dival on Sunday.
What's your website?
SchmaltzBrewing.com, Twitter, Instagram. I think we got a Pinterest now.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm on Pinterest. I like the craft.
Yeah. Make your own craft beer menorah.
All right. Then for Judy McGuire and Liz in the booth, is Mike Edison, Arts and Seizure. We're going out with something I recorded just for you.
Woo!
The following is a holiday message from Mike Edison and the Space Liberation Army.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.